Welcome to The Smoke Break. I'm your host, Joel Pyle Zane, here with Zoe Schwartz.
Hello.
Taylor Barrett.
Hi.
And Emma Cooper. Excellent. So we're going to do a real quick disclaimer, which is to say that this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. We work in the field of mental health, but we do not claim to be professionals in this space. Our intention is to have conversations around lived experience. As a result, we may not always agree or disagree with everything our guests say, but we do intend to hold space for open conversations and learning from one another. Emma, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So a topic that we kind of wanted to talk about a little bit is just kindness. I feel like kindness is something that's like, I feel like it gets overlooked sometimes, you know, just like the little acts, you know, some people think they have to do something big, you know, to be kind. But, you know, like, what would you say is like the impact of just even like a small act of kindness?
I think the impact is really great. I think like one of the, I mean, not to just immediately get into heavy shit, but one of the core parts of my like lived experience is being a suicide attempt survivor, and specifically that I attempted suicide when I was 15, which is a real ripe age to be doing that. And I think one of the like greatest things that I brought from that is that like you just always have to tell people you love them. And I know that sounds really corny, and I think that like I just like I talk about people positively behind their backs all the time because I have incredible people around me, and like we don't know that unless we say it, and it's become like a kind of like socially awkward thing to like provide affirmations or like validations for people. And I was even talking to my friend the other day, because we were at her graduation in San Francisco, and a girl walked by and was like, "I love your outfit." Mm-hmm. And I was like, I need to start saying that to people more. Like, I never say that because I'm such like a anxious person in public by myself, and I'm like,
it's a small
noise canceling headphones on, like, don't.
Well, just even saying like I like that outfit as you're like walking past somebody, like somebody walked past the other day and was just like, "Your hair is like a chef's kiss." Mwah. I was like, "Okay, all right." Like, that's, I felt good for the rest
Zane's
of the
been
day.
Thinking about that every day. No,
I keep talking about
as
it.
As you should, though. Yeah. As you should. Like, it carries with you, and it only takes like a second to do that. And there really is like no, there's no loss in that when you're doing it with the right intentions, too. I think like that's another thing that I've been talking to people a lot about like recently, is that like my kindness or showing up for people or compassion or like respect for people is not dependent. It doesn't have, you know, like,
there's not certain rules for you to be kind to you.
Yeah. And it's also not dependent upon like you showing up back for me. It's like, I am doing this for you in a way where like you could completely turn your back on me and do things that put me in shitty positions, and I'm still giving you that kindness because I think you deserve it. That's not awesome. Because I want something back from you or think that it like means that I'm entitled to respect from you. And I think
it's
that
not
that's
like transactional.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think with our clients too, like I think like that's, you know, I'm always going to be kind to them because I love them. They light up my day.
This isn't about what you're giving back to me or the effort you put in, and now you deserve kindness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I think, and it's hard to be a social worker, obviously, and it's hard to be a social worker in Portland. And like, and when people come into our space and are in a really not great mood or not great headspace and are like, you know, like, I fucking hate this place, I hate the services here, I hate everyone here, I hate the staff, I hate like all of this shit. Like, and people are like, you know, like, we do so, I've been up since 9 o'clock. I'm like, they don't owe us kindness. They do not owe us kindness. This is what we're signing up for, is to like show up and be compassionate and give our hearts out, and they do not owe us that back. And like, our individual acts of kindness, while they are like great, are also not going to make up for like systemic oppression.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Zoe, what about your experience? Like, what's been your experience with, like, you know, small acts of kindness, even large acts of kindness?
Well, I feel like I could relate to something you said about, like, I feel like I used to be one of those people where I wasn't really comfortable giving, like, tons of compliments to people or just, like, positive affirmations. And I would see other people doing it to each other. And I felt like part of me felt like it was cheesy. And I think it was just like how I was raised or something. Mm-hmm. But then I started to feel sort of like, why can't I do that? Why? It's like a weird thing. And so now I've just made a better habit of doing it. Like, I started by just like little things. Like, I'll just tell people I appreciate them.
Yeah.
Because it just feels like I want to say it, but I always felt cheesy saying it. Yeah. So mm-hmm. I just think I just get with practice. But that's one of the ones, like, just anytime anybody does anything for me or anytime anybody like shows me respect in an interaction, yeah. I usually try to say I appreciate you. Or if
you
I'm
say
asking
that a lot to me, so I appreciate I appreciate you.
Yeah, but I can relate to that like tendency to just like feel weird, like probably just social anxiety, like you were saying, just wanting to like not feeling comfortable doing that as much, but then also feeling kind of left out about people that were being kinder to one another. And then I, for a long time, framed it as cheesy. And I was like, oh, I'm just not cheesy like that, you know, or I don't overdo things. I don't sugarcoat things, you know, but then I realized like, it doesn't really feel, like there are times where I want to say something and I don't know what to say because I'm like, oh, it's going to be cheesy or whatever. Yeah. And then, but I also think, and I also noticed like a lot of people will do it to me. Sometimes it does make you feel put on the spot when someone's like, oh, I like your outfit or whatever, but it's kind. And I think just practicing, like doing it more regularly, I think is something that I've done that sort of made it feel more natural.
Yeah. Well, I think there almost is like a, you know, I guess it's like an implied like, oh, if you're being nice, then it's like it's to get something or it's, you know, you're being too nice, you know. And it's like, I feel like the problem with that is that like we think that giving those things would be, you know, like it's more bad than it is good. It's going to do more bad than it does good. But it's just like even hearing like, hey, I really appreciate you doing that. Mm-hmm. I saw you do this. You handled this really well. Like just little stuff like that is enough to like keep you going. Taylor, what about you?
I have a difficult time like accepting acts of kindness sometimes. It's weird, but it's something that I've been like trying to work on, and like I definitely appreciate the way that you have interacted with me is like especially with the examples you gave of like noticing that somebody's doing something and like pointing it out, and just through a lot of the conversations we've had, it might just be because we're as close as we are, but like you notice things that like I am specifically working on or things that like I struggle with, and like you've been able to like point those things out and just be like, I saw you did this. Like that was cool. And like that's made like my entire day 180 like multiple times. And like that's super cool. But I also did want to ask, and like I'll answer too, obviously, but I wanted to ask like everybody, like what is their like favorite way to like receive kindness? And I think that will kind of inadvertently also be a conversation about like love languages too.
I was gonna say that's what makes me think of.
Like as soon as I was like, I want to ask this question, I was like, that's just love languages, but also like I think that's an important thing to talk about too. Like I didn't like it for a long time. I didn't like that I liked this for a long time, but I like one of my love languages is for sure like acts of service, but also like knowing that that's something that I like creates like a layer of like guilt sometimes, because I'm like, well, like, okay, somebody has to like do something for me to like feel good about it, and I feel like a dick about it, but like I took another layer of like just kind of accepting that that is a type of love language, and that that happens to be mine.
And I think it often is a love language of people who are doing a lot for others. Like I think it's often a love language of caregivers, where like you're like, okay, probably 95% of my life is like acts of service for other people.
You're good.
Acts of service for other people. And like in that, like, yeah, it does feel good to have like the way like have people show up for you the way that you show up for other people, and like truly feel that. And I think, I mean, there's been like a thing referencing TikTok again, a little Gen Z, but there's been like a thing on TikTok of people being like, I know that like genuine love exists because I exist and I love that way. And I think that is like a thing that I hold strongly in my heart. And on the topic of both love languages and like telling people that you appreciate them, I think another like core moment for me that makes me the like very soft human that I am, where I'm constantly sending out messages to everyone being like, I love you, by the way. But when I was in like seventh grade, I had this gym teacher. Her name was Miss Smith. She was a lesbian. She was dope as fuck. And she talked just a lot about like other life stuff and stuff like involving like physical, like not just physical health, but like autonomy and like bodily autonomy.
That's cool.
And like
that's really cool.
Your mental health and how those things correlate and just like how, you know, trying to make yourself feel good, all of these things. And so at one point I've always been a cancer girly, but
I'm a cancer too.
I felt that. I wrote her a letter and I was just like, I really appreciate you. Like, I really appreciate everything that I've like learned in this class and like middle school. That was like hard years for me. And I like, you have been like a good, just a really strong like female role model for me in all of these ways. And once again, like wasn't like expecting something, and I left it on her desk when she like wasn't there because I was like, I don't need like a, you know, response to this. I don't need to see you, read it, whatever. That's like a personal thing. And then the next day that I had gym, like the day or two after that, she like called me into her office after and started crying and was like, I just really want to thank you for that. Like I was about to put in my notice that day. Because I just feel really unimportant here, and like I don't feel like I'm having the impact that I want to, and like I feel really differently about like the role that I have here and the impact that I have on people. And I think like that's another piece that I was thinking about is just like we have to trust in like our just like human emotional intuition. And that also so much of the time when we're thinking like, I adore this person and like maybe they would benefit from hearing that, it is actually when someone's having a hard time.
Right?
And like, I think about too, like the time that I like came and said hi to you or whatever at a show. And like didn't think twice about it because I'm just like, oh my god, it's Zane. Love Zane. Let me go say hi. Let me go give them a hug. And you were like, that was a really hard week for me. And that stood out. Yeah, like that stood out, you know. And it's like
I came and talked about it on this show because I was like, I don't usually like hugs, but I needed one in that moment.
Yeah. And it's we have to like, I don't know, like humans are very emotional human beings, and we have to trust in that like there also might be genuine like reason and intuition in us thinking or like wanting to do these kind acts, and that's part of
I think that's a good point. It's like a good example too of just like somebody who like probably wouldn't have said that they weren't doing well, but like appreciated any kindness, even if it was like not, because it's like you were talking about love languages, mine is not touch, mine is words of affirmation. So it's just like I get like when I'm nervous and somebody gives me a hug, I'm like, this feels like a straitjacket, but it's like in that moment, like that was what I needed, that's what helped me feel better. Zoe, what about your the way that you like to receive kindness?
Oh, my love language.
Like, yeah, I'm like, how do I
I don't know. I feel like it's like words of affirmation and acts of service, but mostly words of affirmation. Cause I feel like, I don't know. I think I just, cause I have a lot of self-talk. I'm like a real, I have ADHD. So there's a lot going on up there and I'm constantly trying to like combat negative self-talk sometimes. And so I think like when somebody reflects to you what they like about you, it really it kind of cracks open that thing of like, I don't see myself accurately. You know, we don't often see ourselves accurately. And sometimes we really need other people to remind us that like we're good because we can get in our own heads, you know? So I think probably that's part of why I like it. And I'm the same way. Like I'm very, like when I was little, I used to say, I love you like all the time to the point where my mom was like, it doesn't mean anything because you say it too much. But in my little like anxious weirdo head, I was like, well, what if this is the last time I see you? So I would always say it to everybody. Yeah. Like I do, I say it to like multiple times when I leave anyway. And so, yeah. And so I think I just have always been like super, like want to tell people how I feel about them. And because I think I need a lot of reassurance, I like to give it to other people. So yeah, I think it kind of formed like around what I like. But I think I kind of do the same thing. I think I'm like acts of service and words of affirmation when I give love too. So
yeah, go ahead. No, please.
Oh, I was just going to say, and it's really nice when you friend or partner or like, you know, romantic partner, when you are around somebody regularly that you have like, or either you have the same ones or you're like the way you like to give is the way you like to get. And it's like, feels so good sometimes to be around someone like that.
It's very
like,
harmonious.
Yeah. It feels really good when you're in sync with somebody like that. You're like, wow, this is like,
You knew I just needed to hear that that I'm doing my best.
Yeah. Haven't you had those friends before where you just feel like really appreciated with when they feel the same way? And it's like, because you know how you have those other relationships where like something will get unsaid and then there's like this weird tension and it's because something wasn't done when they expected it or vice versa, you know, and it's just like can cause a lot of separation in relationships. So I think it's really cool because a lot of the time it is just like the communication is lacking. Yeah. And like, if you could communicate, then you could meet each other's needs. But it's really refreshing when you just naturally meet someone's needs like that.
Yeah.
But I think everybody needs to hear kindness. So I think I agree with you. Like, I always try to be really nice to people. Like, when I go grocery shopping or whatever, yeah, yeah. Like, people
know what
working.
That smile does for somebody.
Yeah, people working mundane jobs where people treat them like crap. Like, I always go out of my way to be like,
Hi, tipping how are you doing? Gas station attendants.
Yeah, totally.
I cannot tell you. Like, people will like
just light up.
I'll give them a few bucks and they'll be like, God bless you.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This made my entire day. Like, people never fucking do this shit anymore.
Fast food workers,
I'm
too.
I'm like, if you don't want to work this job, you better be tipping them.
Yeah.
I would not no disrespect. Totally. I'm not fit for a gas station. Yeah. I wouldn't do well there. Yeah. So I will be tipping them every time. Totally. Because
absolutely.
Respect.
Absolutely. That should be a rule, is if you wouldn't do it, you should tip the people who do.
Yeah, I always tip fast food. I try to tip fast food workers because nobody ever tips them and they work super hard.
Yeah,
it's chaotic as fucking. Yeah. I can imagine that, hearing all those buzzers going off is like, yeah, I could use a dollar right now.
Yeah. Like, you only made 15 in the last hour. I don't know exactly.
That is like a point of like being seen, right? Like, it's the same thing of being like,
I know you're not
I'm providing.
Enough.
Yeah, and I'm providing these acts of service all day. And like, you know, you're not in the position to provide an act of service back to me necessarily, but you're still taking the second to like provide what you can, or just say like, I see you and I appreciate that you're doing this service to me. And like, it's not something I feel entitled to either.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think, going back to what Zoe was saying, like, I think, that alignment within love language is so important, because like what Taylor was saying about like acts of service and like how like I think that's likely probably a shared love language amongst most of us, and it can feel like, you know, it can trigger guilt, I guess, to be like, I'm expecting someone to do this thing for me, and it's something I know I can do on my own, and like, I'm an independent person, I don't want to be, you know, make anyone feel like they have to like caregive for me. And also, like, as people who are caregiving so much of the time, like, it is nice to
have something done for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like, even within like words of affirmation, I think like, if somebody doesn't understand that or isn't able to like connect with that, then, you know, there's like, why do I have to like verbalize my love for you when I'm doing all of these other things to show up for you? Yeah. And it's like, it's not about, you know, lacking those other things. It's about like, this is what sticks in my brain.
This is like how I feel it.
Exactly. Yeah, totally. Absolutely. I think that's important to recognize that people give kindness in different ways. And, you know, like, even if it may not be your love language, that they're still trying. So I think that's awesome. All right. We're going to take a real quick break and we will be right back with the smoke break. And welcome back to the Smoke Break. I'm your host, your old pal Zane, here with Zoe Schwartz.
Hello.
Taylor Barrett.
What's up?
And Emma Cooper.
Hi.
Social worker and student, correct?
Correct.
All right. Excellent. Well, I mean, that actually, I feel like that helps us tie into our next part, learning. So I'm sure you've done a little bit of that. Zoe, you have too. Nope, not at all. Never mind. She shook her head. She said no.
Just 6 years of college that I blocked out.
I imagine.
You just blacked out for 6 years. I found this master's degree.
You'd be surprised. You would be surprised.
I imagine. Well, I mean, like, my experience with learning, I feel like I'm somebody who always likes to learn. I feel like there's always more information. I also feel like I'm always learning from the people around me. You know, I feel like other people, their experiences can be great sources of learning. What's been like your experience with about learning about something that you actually are interested in?
You're good. I feel like I have always kind of separated like school and like education and like learning in my mind, because I grew up in a family of a lot of teachers. My grandpa, who's like my closest family member, my soulmate, my twin flame. He was a professor for all of his life, and he used to like set up little classrooms for me in his bedroom, like take home whiteboards and Expo markers and stuff, and I would give him a little lesson. And also in that, like, school was always kind of a rough setting for my brain as someone who has definitely had ADHD my whole life, and also didn't get diagnosed until like 2021, when I had already finished my, you know, K-12, whatever, and started in college. But that was like, I think, hard also to find the separation in that of like, I like learning and I like learning new things and
formal
like,
education.
Yeah. And it's so almost similar to love languages in that like everybody learns differently and that needs to be offered to you in the way that you're susceptible to and in a way that you can like take in.
It speaks to you. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've had that conversation with like so many of our clients of like being like, why can't I figure out this thing as like an adult, you know, like when people have been trying, you know, I've been trying whatever. And I'm like, if you aren't taught that and like able to practice it in a compassionate space, mm-hmm. like you're not actually going to like learn it, you know? Yeah. Yeah. And so I think that was like a big separation between school and also like when I was in high school and I started like volunteering and stuff like that and kind of getting into the social work field, then I had like an especially hard time because I was like, I still do value education and learning about things. And I don't think that I need to take algebra in order to become a social worker. I think that I will be okay without that.
A lot of extra stuff. You're just like, I don't need this. You think I need this. I'm never going to use it. It almost seems pointless.
And especially with like ADHD or neurodivergence, like that was my biggest thing is like if I couldn't ring something as like important in my brain in some capacity, then I just could not sit through it. Yeah. Like I had this Spanish teacher who like, and I loved learning Spanish. I loved when we were like all conversating in Spanish and stuff like that. And like probably 2 out of 3 classes of the week, he would like just put on a movie in Spanish and like have us kind of take note. I was out. I was immediately. Yeah. I would walk in, see the projector pulled down, and I'd walk back out.
Well, that's the thing is if it's not conducive to the way that you learn, then it's like it can take you away from something that you might even like.
And I think it almost like didn't feel like challenging enough. Like I was like, I can't like with the like ADHD, like understimulation, overstimulation stuff. I was like, I can't really engage in this because this is like an activity where like I can't even sit at home and watch movies. Sure, like I'm not gonna like sit and take notes on this movie in your class. Like I'm gonna be on my phone. I'm gonna be doing something else. Like
Well, that makes sense.
But that was like a big shift and want and like me going into like higher education, I guess, was like being able to take classes that are more
tailored to what you want to do.
Yeah,
that's awesome. That's awesome, Taylor. What about you? Speaking of tailored, right.
You said that,
okay, comedian.
Well, like I definitely resonated with you saying like things that you don't value or like see as important that are like difficult to learn. And I wanted to like add that like important or interesting, like specifically to you. Like I can spend hours on what could easily be chalked up to like bullshit, but it's just like I'm like in this rabbit hole because this is I'm just fascinated by this one thing and like I'm just diving deep. Like I wasn't into like horror movies, and then like a week later after I didn't give a shit, I was like I knew like everything about fucking all these horror movies that I just been studying from like 1950 to like now, and like
Because it was interesting, it was easier to like stay engaged.
It's like the Am I the Asshole Reddit stories I was telling you about. Like I could spend hours on this.
Yep.
And exactly. It's difficult wanting something to be important or interesting and just feeling it not be. Yeah. It's so difficult. Like you just feel like you're like Sisyphus pushing this boulder up a hill just to have it fall down. Cause like spend all this time learning it and like so trying to soak it all up. And then as soon as you're like not like looking head in a book. Yeah, exactly. As soon as you're not looking at it, it's just gone and the boulder's down the hill again.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about math. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got kind of lucky that I thought math was kind of interesting. So I was able to soak up a little bit of it.
Wow. I'm in my first year of the bachelor's program to finish my bachelor's in social work, and I have not taken the college math placement test.
Put it off for as long as you can.
If I changed my degree, university, skip past this part.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're supposed to be good at talking to people. We're not supposed to be good at
numbers. I changed my degree so I didn't have to take statistics because I failed
That's
it.
That's funny. That's
and
funny.
I was like, I don't
what know. About you? You spent some time in school.
Yeah, it was hard. I never really like. I've always like people have always told me like you're smart, but school's always been really hard for me because I definitely have really bad ADHD, and I didn't get diagnosed until I was like 19 or 20, and then I didn't really believe it until I was like 38 or something.
That's a good time. That off for as long as possible.
I really only have fully accepted it like recently, and I think learning is hard, and I think what you said too about like how learning we're all expected to learn. And I mean, I think this is like the biggest issue with one of the bigger issues with our culture in general. Is like there's a standard and everybody who doesn't fit into that standard is just seen as like subpar in some way. And then you grow up feeling inadequate when it's like, turns out I was actually really smart. Just nobody was catering to the way I learned because I didn't learn the way that you're supposed to learn. You know what I mean?
And I think it's like hard for your self-image to like be like similarly like people like I was in like talented and gifted programs in elementary school, like tutoring other students. And then like, I think also to be like told like, oh, you're so smart, like whatever, you're so, you know, brilliant, and then struggle so hard in school is such a weird thing for your brain to like wrap around.
And like, what's the phrase where it's like, if you judge a fish by its ability to like climb a tree, then it's going to look stupid compared to the monkey. That always resonated with me a lot.
Definitely,
the learning styles and the way that I absorb information didn't feel like, or even just like the way like I would be acing tests, no problem, but then I wouldn't do like an ounce of homework.
Ounce of homework.
I didn't give it, so I would have like C's in a class, even though I was getting A's on every single test.
Yeah, and, like, I was very similar. Like
it was so frustrating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I definitely like, I don't know, I've like struggled with ADHD, like retaining information and stuff like that, but things that I found interesting, I found really interesting. And I had that problem in school. Where, you know, like a lot of teachers would think that I was dumb because I wasn't learning the way other people were, or like it seemed like I wasn't paying attention. But like when it would come to the test, they'd be like, well, you showed up smelling like cigarettes, but you got a fucking A. So that like, who really cares?
My high school experience was like my school counselor sat me down and was like, so I did the math. I scored up your attendance. You were present one out of every four school days this year.
Well done.
And I also still finished with a 3.5 GPA because I didn't. I was like, I don't need, if I sit here through you explaining all of this stuff, I'm actually just going to like lose my mind. Mm-hmm. And, but also going into like the conversation of like, how do you learn and how do you learn about things that are important to you? Like, I think that that is a big theme, and what all of us are talking about is like, I think that people underestimate the power of conversation and like how much people just learn from talking to one another and like in a, obviously like a space where people feel like they can truly share, but like, and a space where people feel like they can truly listen because they're not being forced to think a certain way. And I think that that is like incredibly underestimated, and that is like so much of how I learn. And like, I am very like grateful and privileged to be in college and like obtain a higher education. And I will always like, I tell people every single time, I tell my professors, I tell, you know, bosses, whatever, that like my experience at work will always be of higher value than whatever I learn in school, because it's
it's the experience. People,
it's the humans that like, you know.
Well, I mean, I feel like they can give you a book and be like, this is how people react when you do this. This is how people react when you do this. But like your lived experience of like enacting that and seeing how people actually react to it, I feel like it has a lot more value than just being like, you know, like there is things in books that like that can help us. You know, but it's like to say that like the thing that I learned from somebody close to me is of no value because it wasn't in a book, I feel like undermines how important our lived experience is.
Well, there's an immediate reaction to it too. Like if you read in a book, like if you're nice to someone, they will be happy. Then like, okay, cool, that's information. But then if you actually are nice to someone and you see them react happy, then like that has like a totally different like brain chemical response. And,
It's like, going to stick more because you're like, absolutely. I remember making somebody happy, not I remember reading about it.
That's how humans learn, right?
Absolutely.
I was just gonna say, when I was doing the master's in social work program, a bunch of the classes let us self grade, which was like wild to me. It was during the pandemic too, so it was like they were being. But also because they're, I mean, obviously if they disagreed with you strongly, like it's a master's program. So if you're not there doing well, then like, why are you there? Kind of, you know?
Yeah. I don't even know if I can mark myself up.
It was cool though, because one teacher that did it gave a research article about why self-grading works better. And it was basically all about how, like, if we're able to pursue learning in a way that like we're interested and we're
conducive to you,
that people learn more. And that when you take tests and when you memorize things, you learn less. And so if people were actually able, given the freedom to self-grade and to like learn in the flow that worked for them,
grade based on effort.
Yeah,
too.
You retain more and more information and like all that. So
yeah, well, and I think you're able to like judge yourself in like a, you know, like I feel like a more accurate way, you know, because it's just like I feel like more accurate in a sense, but like, because I feel like if I were to judge myself, like, that's bad. Like, don't do that, you know? But it's like, I'm probably going to be more harsh on myself than maybe like my teacher might, you know? Mm. But it's like, at the same time, it's like, I get to judge myself by like, is this better than the last thing I made? Instead of being like, did I get an A like this guy? You know, the fucking weird bell curve shit. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think learning.
Without the pressure, I think, is a big part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like removing that pressure and just allowing people to, just learn at their own rate and retain at their own rate is super important. So, excellent. We're going to take a real quick break and we will be right back with the smoke break. And welcome back to the smoke break. I'm your host, Joel Powell Zane. Here with Zoe Schwartz.
That's me.
Taylor Barrett.
Hello.
And Emma Cooper.
Hello.
All right. So, wrapping this up, we wanted to talk about
self-talk.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Taylor can always tell when I forget what the topic is because I slow down on the way to what it is.
I thought you knew because you were emphasizing talk.
It sounded like I was. But self-talk. So we all have a really cool voice in our head that
always is always very nice to us.
Always very nice to us.
Very reassuring.
And just sees you as you are, like, realistically. Accurately.
Positive affirmation.
Yes. Yeah, positive affirmations naturally, of course. Yeah. So none of that's true. what do we do about it? What do we do about it? I have some pretty negative self-talk. I feel like I've known me my whole life. So that's, I feel like I'm biased. So I feel like it's not a very fair representation of who I am, you know, because it's like I know who I've been. But what's everybody else's? Like, Zoe, what's your experience with self-talk? I feel like you're always nice to yourself.
No, yeah, totally. it's a daily battle, I would say. It's like a lifelong battle to be nice to yourself. And yeah. And even once you start, like, and this is the fun thing about, like, you know, healing or growth is, like, you think, like, once you unpack it and you know where it comes from, that, like, somehow it'll go away, but it doesn't totally go away. Like, those old voices are kind of always there. So I think for me, like, right now I'm in one of those, like, really? We're still doing this? Yeah. We're still doing this old story? But I think also, like, something I try to recognize is, like, when those voices come back, like, what's going on? Like, is there a reason why my ability to like question those voices, or maybe why like the veil between those voices and reality is thinner now, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think like that's something I try to take into consideration. Like I'm hormonal today. So like, yeah, I'm probably being a little mean to myself because I'm feeling a little irrational and like, I mean, maybe not irrational, but yeah, just like kind of negative and like, focused on the negative. So yeah. So I think, but I think just realizing how much power, like the way we talk to ourselves has is something that I've really tried to, be more aware of, you know, and like how we really can change the way we feel if we talk to ourselves differently. It's just that's a lot much easier said than done, I think. That's what people are like, just be nice to yourself, and you're like, yeah, okay, yeah, I'll
super
try.
Super easy. Well, and like, you know, like you've said it before, and I always just appreciate when you address those voices in your head as old voices, because it's like recognizing the growth that you have and the voice that you want to have, but also recognizing that like that's still a part of you. Emma, what about you? What's been your experience with like self-talk?
Yeah. I mean, I think both as someone who's experienced a lot of trauma throughout my life and someone who, like, my neuro whatever is shaped by also having, like, OCD and things where, like, I would love to have control over way more things than I have control over. And I think that is, like, a huge aspect of my negative self-talk and the things that I say to myself. Is I think that like I have both made like a habit and a pattern out of it and found it easier like to believe that I am the one that did something wrong versus like this human that I really trust is actually like faulting me, or like, oh, things are like actually kind of fucked up in the world, or like there's this bigger picture, harder to understand, more complex thing happening that you can't just blame on a singular person. And I think like, as human beings, like we have like a natural want for accountability because it makes sense. Like we want to like connect harm to one person so we can also like place our blame and hurt towards one person. And that person for me is so often myself, like trying to like, yeah, be like, well, if you hadn't done A, B, and C, then like this wouldn't have turned out that way. And that's something that I like, yeah, again, easier said than done, but have tried to be like more conscious of in like when I feel myself being like having really negative self-talk, being like, was any of this actually in my control, or am I just like grasping at something tangible and feasible
to think that
I
you
can
could
like,
have been in control?
Right.
Weren't.
Right. Cause it's easier to believe that, like, you know, oh, I fucked up. You know, I think even like from a kid's standpoint, like it's easier for a kid to believe like I have some sort of problem within me than it is for them to believe that like their caregiver and the person they look up to has some faults as a human being isn't able to show up for them.
Yeah. No, I like that you said that. Just the part about God, it just fucking escaped me. You were basically, oh, that's what it was. It's like, it's basically like looking at like your life and looking at like the bigger picture and zooming out, you know, because I feel like a lot of times, like when we're so far zoomed in, like just super close to a picture, it's like, this is what, where all the problems should be stemming from. But it's like, when you zoom out, you're like, oh, I can see how this impacted this. I can see how this impacted this. And yeah. And the other thing that it kind of like reminded me of is a book that Zoe, when I was staying at your place, you had this book that really fucking helped me, because it kind of made the case that like our negative self-talk kind of comes from like the idea that like we think that a good person punishes a bad person. So if we're the bad person, then the good thing would be to punish ourselves. Mm. And I really fucking like I was just like, oh yeah, I'm a good person because I'm mean to me. It's like, that's not how that works. Mm. Taylor, what's been your experience with self-talk?
My self-talk's absolute fucking mess sometimes.
Okay,
and
sure.
I've definitely tried to like incorporate strategies to like manage and kind of like put the reins on self-talk. Mm. There's one thing that I feel like works for me when I remember to do it most of the time. Mm. I don't remember to do it most of the time, but when I do remember to do it, it works most of the time.
Okay.
And it's like envisioning your self-talk as like a bratty 12-year-old that's just like being snobby to you and just like, mm-hmm. well, you fucked this up. And it's like, okay, fuck you. Like, yeah. Like that's okay. Mm-hmm. And like, that's
like patronizing the voice kind of, right?
Yeah. It's like, yeah. Sure. Yeah. I fucked up. Or like, you know, like that's such a huge problem. Like, yeah. And, but there's also that like, there's a secondary layer to that where like I think that self-talk is a way of like keeping yourself in check sometimes. Sure. And like guaranteeing accountability for like when you do actually fuck up.
Yeah.
And so that's not always beneficial to like talk shit to your self-talk.
Yeah.
But they're like part of what's keeping you in check is like wildly inappropriate sometimes. Like we were watching fucking like David Goggins videos the other day. Where
fuck yeah,
like,
we were. Like, this guy's crazy. I want to watch this.
It's hilarious how like out of left field this dude is.
I don't even know who that
David
is.
Goggins, he's like,
he's an extreme marathon runner. He's like the only person that's ever passed like SEAL training, like elite army training, like every single thing that he
just for fun,
just because he's
funsies,
because he's the dude that wants to do this. He's he ran a 4-person 24-hour relay race by himself, apparently.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
is like,
that's not a relay race.
What prompts you to do that?
He's but fucking
being
bananas.
The most manly man of men.
But
does he
like,
drink Bang energy?
Does he take ice baths?
probably ice baths. I don't know about Bang.
Yeah,
I can't
he probably
does
it. Put those toxins in his body, type of shit. You know.
Yeah. But he definitely listens to Joe Rogan, though.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think he's been on Joe Rogan. Yeah. I was going to say, I think he's been on Joe Rogan. But like,
yeah. Look him up. He's fucking ridiculous.
It's bananas. And like that, like the way that he talks, I feel like is a lot of people's like self talk. Like, you need to push yourself. You need to fucking do this. And like, there's no level of like self care or like patience or forgiveness with yourself. Yeah, exactly. I think compassion is the biggest part. That's like, because like to be able to do that, super cool. But he's also kind of a dick.
Yeah.
And like, that's not like having that level of like expectation for yourself of like constantly pushing and constantly trying to like do everything perfect in the most extreme way is really, really like unhealthy for you. So there's like, I feel like that type of self-talk infects a lot of people, and like this like weird like alpha male renaissance bullshit is like really stressing me out. And like,
we had to stop watching the videos because we're like, this is a lot, and this is like getting more and more toxic. And it's just like, it's crazy to just peel back the layers and just like look at the things that like in theory it could be right, like working really hard towards something could be good, but like sacrificing everything just for like sacrificing sleep, sacrificing time with, you know, it's like a little bit of sacrifice is important, but to like not acknowledge your humanity and expect yourself to work like a fucking machine is like, it's unhealthy.
There's nuance and like dialectics in it. And I think that that's like, an important piece of what you said is that like self-talk can be a very negative, toxic thing, and it can also be something that keeps us in check. And like, what I think one of the, you know, beginning like brainstorming topics that we were thinking about was like coping and like self-talk, right, is a form of coping. Mm-hmm. So it's not inherently good or bad. It's just something that is serving a purpose. And I think figuring out what exactly that purpose is important. And then, you know, being aware of it and also being aware of like, how is this serving me right now? So mm-hmm. like if I was like a child and I was getting yelled at if I did anything wrong, like mm-hmm. maybe that negative self-talk was protective of me because it mm-hmm. kept me from doing something wrong and getting yeah. yelled at. And like, we have to appreciate that it served that purpose there and that yeah. it's not something that's useless or that came out of nowhere or that's just like completely, you know, coming out of ourselves. And also the acknowledgement of like, I'm in a new environment now. I'm in a new situation. Like, is this still serving me?
Yeah.
Maybe it needs to be tweaked a little bit. Yeah. And that doesn't mean we take it off the table, right? Because self-talk isn't something we can ever just like
get rid of.
Yeah.
And that'd be so strange to like never have an inner monologue or like
there are people who don't have an inner yeah. monologue yeah. and that
I don't understand how that's possible.
I've never been
how do you make decisions if you don't have an inner monologue? But I have heard this too, that some people don't. Do you think it's that they don't, or do you think it's that like it just doesn't, it's not like in words, it's in like
pictures?
Some other, yeah, like there's got to be something going on. Just,
right? I think they might pictures. Be fully conscious. I feel like there's a constant Socratic seminar in my head yeah. of like yeah, 12 exactly. different people.
Yeah.
Like
all my emotions, like the Inside Out movie mm-hmm. or whatever, where it's like anger and sadness are all conversing. It's like, what do we fucking do? And it's like, well, probably cry.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's part of like the like parts work and like looking at like people as like having different parts and like, mm-hmm. yeah, like listening to that voice and being like, is that my bratty 12-year-old self who's exactly. saying that stuff to me? Is this my inner child who's really scared that I'm going to get yelled at? And yeah. that's who's saying that stuff to me, and being yeah. aware of what part of yourself is saying that and responding to it as such. Because if it's your inner child, also you don't want to be like, fuck off. Like you're
yeah.
being,
exactly. yeah.
you know.
That's what everyone told my inner child.
Exactly.
My outer child,
and you don't
actually.
Need to do the same thing. Yeah.
I just want to say, like, I think that, like, at a base level with, like, if trauma wasn't involved and, neurodivergence wasn't involved, I think self-talk would just be a way of, like, reflecting and, like, it would just be thinking. But then, like, trauma and neurodivergence gets factored in and that negative self-talk or, like, that self-talk can become negative and it can yeah. become yelling at yourself or, like, you pushing yourself to extremes that are that are unhealthy. And, like, learning more about yourself, therapy is really important. Learning more about yourself and like learning where that intensity and the negativity comes from and like how to navigate that mm-hmm. is like absolutely vital to like knowing what parts of that like of your self-talk is doing what and what purpose it's serving. And I think yeah. so like you said, it's also to acknowledge when it is that like scared kid that you need to like soothe and take care of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and I like the you both of you were talking about just kind of like the purpose of it, you know, because I feel like with a lot of things we view as bad, like we're not looking at through the lens of like, what is the purpose of this? A lot of people have problems with drugs. Mm-hmm. We don't. But that's because we see the purpose that it serves, you know, and it's like, I think if you can see.
You mean like problem with people using drugs?
Yeah, yes. Right. Well, I mean, just even like more like.
I was like, speak for yourself. No.
Well, just like even like the idea that like drugs don't have a morality.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's just like I feel like almost self-talk doesn't either. It's just kind of like the perception of like this is a bad voice. This is telling me bad things. It's like mm-hmm. it might just be telling you something to keep you in check, but it's mm-hmm. like it's easier to put it in a box of like this is a bad thought that mm-hmm. I had.
But it comes back to the self-education or the education conversation too of like, if you're responding to yourself like that with aggression, that's not the environment that people learn in. Like, that's mm-hmm. not going to be effective to you. That's not going to make you better mm-hmm. yeah. as a human, because we need compassion to learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Zoe.
Oh, I was going to say, it makes me think about how like something that was really helpful for me when trying to work on my self-talk mm-hmm. is like the idea that like our first thought is often like our like socially conditioned thought, and then our second thought maybe is more likely to be like our authentic self.
Sure.
And I think
being
that
patient with your self-talk.
Yeah. When I think it just really helped me like understand how to separate myself from the voice that talks shit to me, because I felt like my voice for a long time. Like mm-hmm. I really just thought it was my voice. And then I learned about all the like systemic stuff that was like affecting the way I thought about myself. And I was like, oh, this was given to me. Like I didn't choose to hate my body. I didn't choose to feel whatever, you know? And so I think like once you unpack where the voice comes from, because often it is like a socially conditioned voice or, you know, and so I think like once you unpack that, then it gives you the chance to step back from it a little bit and be like, no wonder it felt like shit my whole life. And I was like, why am I just a dick to myself all the time? Like, this is just life, you know? And then it's like, oh no, you can question where these messages come from. And then you can search for a different voice that like has more compassion or kindness. Yeah. So I think that's been a big learning part of my self-talk.
That's perfect. All right. Well, thank you all so much for joining us.
Yeah. Thank you,
Emma,
so much.
Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a treat talking with you.
It was awesome having you.
Absolutely. This has been The Smoke Break. I'm your host, Joel Pal Zane. Here with Zoe Schwartz.
I've been Zoe.
Taylor Barrett.
Peace out.
And Emma Cooper.
This is Emma.
Later, players.
Signing out.